everybody, and welcome to the January 2019 edition of the Bizarre Briefing. Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome to the new year.
Yay.
Wow.
As our friends the Magic Dragons say, welcome to the new year.
Welcome to the new year.
I'll take your word on it.
That's right. Of course, I'm Bryce Castillo, joined with Brant Hughes.
Hey, that's me.
David Rowan.
What's up?
John Rael.
Hi.
This is the behind the scenes show where we talk about all sorts of YouTube channels that we make, podcasts, things like Scam School and Scam Nation, Modern Rogue, scamstuff.com. David does that. The podcasts, like, what?
It's like, why is he here?
That was a little bit of a weird delivery of like, oh yeah, we've got all these things shows, and Scam Stuff, I guess he does that.
Yep.
Well, if people don't know, it just... Sometimes we don't. Look, I'm just trying to think of if someone listened for the very first time.
Uh-huh.
If we started talking about video stuff, it would be pretty apparent that we know the video stuff.
Right.
But we don't spend a lot of time talking
here.
Well, we don't spend a lot of time talking to David sometimes, and you're only going to be here for the first part of
That's
the show.
True.
So I wanted to make
sure.
So
it won't
sure
be as know. Awkward when I'm just sitting here silent while you're talking about advanced video editing techniques.
Okay. Well.
I'm just like,
but arguably, what he does is like the foundation of this whole little empire we got going on.
Thank you, John.
Kiss ass. speaking of the store, which is what scamstuff.com is, David, we're about to have another big event in the store.
That's
true. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Bryce, you are correct.
Oh, goodness.
So
we activated robot mode. So Scam Stuff is the...
Once a year, we do something called mystery boxes, which is give us some money and we will make something exclusive just for you. It'll be right. Hand curated, and it takes forever usually
because
right. Yeah. We have to go, what did this person buy, like, do they have any of this stuff, because we try not to give them the same stuff that they just bought like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Second of all, like, what's kind of the general theme here? Mm-hmm. You know, and then finally, what do we think that we have that we can send to them and just give them like a tremendous value, so they open it up and they go, jackpot. Spent $99, $200-something worth of stuff in here, maybe $300 or $400 worth of stuff in here.
Yeah.
Awesome. And then 5 days later or 3 days later, mm-hmm. we just go silent and you never hear about it again.
That's mysterious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a box.
Mm-hmm. And so this is, we're going to be doing it very soon. This is our third time doing it, our fourth time? Third time,
metric
think.
Third, yeah.
Okay, sure, yeah. An imperial customary
two and a half.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. I believe. Well, so there. This is the third time it's been technically called
mystery. Boxes.
Mystery. I think there was an early time where there was some sort of misfit items, which is kind of a different
right.
thing. We still try to. We do have misfit items that we will then throw in mystery boxes. So we might say they will like all of this stuff. These like three items or five items or seven items, whatever. Got it's an odd number of items apparently,
yeah.
But. And then at the end, we go, and also there's this product that was scratched or something, so we'll give that to them
yeah.
in addition to all the other stuff that we were going to give them for the mystery box. So the misfit stuff makes its way into there, but it's not just like it's not just that. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, all the stuff is brand new and has passed all of the quality control checks that we have in place
yeah.
at our clean room
looking at
facility.
It.
That's yeah. right. Mm-hmm. Are there any twists this year on it, or is it just going to be more like making sure people get stuff that... Trying to make sure people get stuff that's not like duplicates.
I would say one of the twists is we have a product that's been on the store for a while that's gone through a couple of iterations. It's got a new design that's not made it to the store yet. So if somebody orders a mystery box, we're going to put in this particular product in almost all of them, I think.
Wow.
And it'll be just exclusively made available to mystery box buyers in this particular design before anyone else.
Wow, so, that's really cool.
Mm. Yeah.
That's nice. And I was hearing Brian talked about this on After Things yesterday, which you can find at weirdthings.com, that this year, you know, normally with a lot of the product launches, we do like we go and shoot a video and usually it's been you and Brian, you know, sitting down talking about the stuff, showing it off, using it. But he was saying that we probably won't even do a video this year
yeah.
for mystery boxes.
Well, to be fair, those are both our stunt doubles that usually do those videos, but,
Ravid Doan.
Yeah. yeah. That's a stage name we use for something else. So,
don't Google that one. Yeah. but cause he was saying, cause we, that episode of After Things was all about email lists.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, so what we've done is we've made a list of anybody who's participated in mystery boxes before, and they are going to get a little sneak opportunity tomorrow to just sort of jump the line and say, give me one of this year's. And depending on how that goes, we'll then probably send an email to
everyone on the list. Yeah.
But we have only a limited number of these that we can make, and we know what that number is. And so we think that when we send those two emails, there's a pretty good chance that over the next, you know, day or 3 days,
that'll be most of the
stuff. That's going to be it. And there's really no need to just kind of go out there into YouTube land and yeah.
And he was saying as much, because I think to, I guess, paraphrase the story he was telling yesterday, was that last year with the VIP list, I think, like, just those people getting access to it was like most of the units or was a lot of units on its own. And so, you know, it's interesting, you know, and that episode was all about email lists you know, the power of email lists. So I recommend it if that's something that interests you. But it's interesting to hear that, like, just the email list and the store itself is large enough to kind of sustain, you know, an event, or like kind of an event sale all on its own without like a big video push.
I think it might be unique only in the sense that anybody who's participated before has just opened their box and gone, like, the math is very simple. I see that I have 2x or 3x or 4x of what I paid.
Yeah.
So, of course, when next year comes around, they're like, I'm sure they're going to take care of me again. And then they do it twice. And then it's like, okay, yeah, I'm just in for this thing. I don't know, you know, for a new product, like let's say we had a new knife in this hidden in a pen.
Yeah.
And we called it the penmanship or something like this. Yeah. You know, that might be more of an unknown, so it makes more sense to just tell everyone about it, because we don't know necessarily what the response is going to be, because they have no experience with that product yet. But this is a product that, even though it's different, it's the same in the sense that they have, like, some sort of reference for, I like this, I like every time it happens, it only happens once a year, and then people just jump in.
Because I'm sure you've been getting prepared for mystery boxes.
Oh, that's another thing that I should probably do.
But how is that prep going? Is it like, because I'm on the outside of all the store stuff, so I only see ancillary, you know, whenever we're around and doing something at the same time. But it always seems like mystery boxes is like a very, like, kind of hectic time.
Yeah. And so what we did this year is we're only doing one level of mystery box.
Oh,
whereas
okay.
in the past we did two levels.
Yeah.
And then we might do a second level maybe later in the year, but for right now we're just focusing on one level, so that will help, because last year I think it took maybe up to 6 weeks to get some of these orders fulfilled for mystery boxes. This year our goal is to have it everything less than like 10 days.
Oh, great.
Which is just a ridiculous reduction in fulfillment.
And so if you
time.
Keep one tier of the stuff for the sale, that makes it quicker to get a lot of that stuff
and
out.
Then we put together a bunch of different, like, permutations that can sort of serve as like base. Like, based on kind of customer profiles, we go, here's the base for that. So it might be like two products, and then we add another two that are custom to them.
Yeah.
You know, but just by making all of that foundational stuff and having it in a box that we feel like is going to fit it, just cuts down on time considerably.
Nice.
Yeah. Sounds complicated.
Yeah. But it's all like a lot of that work is like a lot of hand done work, right? In terms of like checking customer profiles and purchase history, or at least
there's a bit somewhat. Of a, like, so if we did a sale tomorrow night, if it started tomorrow night, like Thursday, we could start reviewing things and potentially have things out on Friday.
But
we would have the first, let's just say 50 out on maybe Friday, but couldn't have them all out.
Yeah, but it's not like there's an algorithm that says make these boxes and put these stickers on them, right?
I kind of joke about that in the draft of the
email
that we have is a joke kind of about the fact that it's just a big Elon Musk AI thing that we say Oompa give us Loompas. The thing.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to take a guess at what this product is, slightly new design product is. You don't have to say whether I'm right or wrong. Yeah.
But you're welcome to say no to every...
I'm probably right.
Okay, here we go.
Is it the Utilikish?
It is not.
Okay. What
did you call it?
Utilikish.
Utilikish?
Uh-huh.
It's the pastry version of the Utiliki.
Yep.
Okay.
It's very delicate, though. don't want to, which is why the laser branding on it is so impressive.
Think about it.
The laser branding on it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Utilikish now with laser branding.
Yeah.
There it is.
costs $1,000. It's a great value.
Sorry, we spoiled this price.
It's Canadian dollars, though, so it's actually a little bit more affordable.
Yes, it's slightly more affordable. Well, that's great. And so, you know, today's Tuesday. You're saying that the email will probably go out. It would probably go out sometime this week, maybe?
I think we're planning on sending the one out to anybody who participated in Mystery Boxes tomorrow, and then we'll probably send out the big one on Thursday, and that'll be that.
Nice.
And then hopefully we can start fulfilling 50 on Friday and another 50 every day after that.
Yeah.
Until we're...
So this is mostly tangentially related. I remember the first year that we did the mystery boxes, the mystery jackpots, whatever. Mm-hmm. I know we had... we spent a lot of time trying to figure out the names and the title for the stuff because loot boxes have like a very specific like connotation. Mm-hmm. And it is great that we didn't use loot boxes, especially in like, say, the last month where I don't know if you guys have seen this like loot box controversy with these YouTubers.
No, is there more loot box controversy?
Did they just take everybody's money and not give them anything, or
basically? So it's it's like what's the name of this company? I know Jake Paul and Rice Gum are some of the big YouTubers. Mystery Brand, that's it. And it's like a mixture of like loot boxes. You know, the idea of like buying a blind box and not knowing what you'll get out of it, and sometimes it's over what you know paid, and sometimes it's, or usually it's a lot less than what you paid. But it also mixes the like the Counter-Strike skins betting sort of issue that was like a big deal last year. And so you had these YouTubers who were putting videos up of them being like, oh, I'm gonna use the site and I'm gonna go buy this box, and this box might have a mansion in it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm gonna buy one of these boxes, and oh, I got, you know, some shoes or something. But then there were like definitely like faked transactions going on in there of like, you know, oh, I'm gonna, you know, get the Supreme box. I hope I get the good Supreme thing. Oh, I got a really good Supreme thing.
Oh, okay.
And it, and so it's a mixture of like faking boxes, but also selling essentially like gambling to kids, because their whole thing is like, okay, well, the product you want is worth this much money. Mm-hmm. You can turn that back into money on our site to spend on another box, or we can give you the item. And also a lot of the items that they sent out were fakes. So,
well, so the one part of our mystery box that's not a mystery is really the value. There's really no chance that you pay for the box and receive something that has a less than the retail value that you paid for it of the stuff,
right? Which is which is why I think, I mean, there's no trouble in what, you know, the what we're doing at all, right?
It's not like, haha, you got a paperclip,
right?
Somebody had to get it.
But it's I remember that story dropping like last month or something, and thinking, I hope we're not using loot box anywhere on all of this stuff, and I don't think that we do, but it's, you know, a current topic right now, and it's kind of a hot button thing.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's worth putting a line or two in the email about, you know, the or just hammering home that point that it's not a gamble in the sense that you might get less than you paid. It's just maybe the gamble is how much more it will be. Mm-hmm. You know, could it be a $400 item? Yes. Could it be a $170 item? Sure. So there is a little bit of maybe a difference, but it's not going to be like, oh, I paid, you know, $99 for this and I got $20 worth of stuff.
And certainly all the like returning customers will understand that the value here is legitimate.
Yeah. I like how B Fiber just said, you're definitely going to get some candy, you just don't know what type of candy. Well, the other thing that we do that I'm guessing none of these other companies do is we have a satisfaction guarantee on every mystery box. So we send it out, and if you're like, I don't like it, send it back.
Yeah.
Refund it.
Oh, yeah. None of these other ones do that, because it's very similar to like a video game where it's no refunds, digital transactions. Sorry, kid. So just a little bit of some hot topical news here on the Bizarre Briefing.
Wow.
So we found out over the past week that we found out over the past week that, quote, we've defeated the fifth mini-boss of starting construction at the headquarters.
I don't doubt that that's a direct quote.
Mm-hmm. It is. Mini-boss is one of the words that's been bandied around a lot the past week.
Of course.
So, just very vaguely, it seems like we can either begin or be done with construction in what I heard was 2 to 6 weeks. So that would be very cool.
Begin in 2 to 6 weeks?
I mean, I guess we could probably begin whenever. I don't know. I'm just saying we're very, very close to like the reality of stuff starting and people being able to see like direct footage and clips of stuff happening at the headquarters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just everything's so icy and snowy outside.
It's winter
right now.
So. Yeah, it's pretty nasty out there.
Yeah, what is it?
75.
I had to turn the AC back on because it was too hot. So that's a little bit of a construction update. We were waiting on a lot of things, and it seems like those things have finally come through. So, barring a catastrophe, fingers crossed, we can start soon.
What day are we doing the bizarre briefing at the studio? That's what
I don't know when we're doing the bizarre briefing today. It will probably like moving all of this podcasting studio over there.
It'd be kind of an ending thing toward the end.
No, I think it would probably be a sooner thing.
Oh, okay.
Because I mean, most of all the set stuff exists, and one of the first things we'll do is do some sort of sound treatment for that room. So, it will probably be one of the first things that fully moves over to the other space.
So then what happens to this space?
I think Brian will be sleeping
in it. Turns into a room again?
Yeah, it will turn into a room. Because what I heard is that there is a bed situation in this house and Brian would like this room back for a bed situation. So.
But is he keeping the soundproofing up? That's what I want to know.
No. Hell no.
No?
I don't think
so.
It'd
be a nice, cozy, you know, soundproof room to sleep in.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a cold chamber.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can get to sleep.
Really?
No.
No, okay. So construction will start soon. So construction's coming soon. Keep on a lookout for more information. Well, we should have some sort of more concrete information in the next episode of this show. So
you would think
there might actually be concrete information.
That's nice. That's right.
Pour a foundation.
A good thing to keep in mind is that everything always takes longer than you expect.
Right. That's what I was thinking. Yes. I mean, that 2 weeks. Quite. I'm like, yeah. I'm going to see. How 6 weeks plays out.
I'm just passing along numbers that I've heard.
Sure.
The numbers I heard were 2 to 6, because I know like we are starting planning for South by Southwest. And because that's coming up in like a month, and trying to see what things can take place at the headquarters on that day. Certainly like the big event won't happen over there because we probably don't have the means to do a big like 50 to 75 person thing over there, even when this phase of construction is done. But we're trying to see what other things can happen over there. But that's affecting like, you know, us booking venues and figuring stuff out with our special guests and the music acts and all sorts of stuff. So we'll also have more information about that probably next episode, though it might depend on when that next episode is, because that might be very close to the day. So South by Southwest.
Cool. And hold for edit.
You're gonna head out?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's time for Dave to head out. So we'll be right back.
Smooth transition.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, good one, David. Oh,
always on. Always on.
But what about his plugs?
They're real. They're real. Well, it's not time for that yet. No, there's some more time to go.
Fair.
So, Brant.
Hey, that's me.
I heard from
it's a lie.
The subtext. Okay. So we had a video go up on Modern Rogue. On the 18th in the middle of June.
Right. About feels like ancient history.
Five secret codes that were hidden in plain sight. Was this an article episode?
But really, it's more like six. Yeah, it was an article video from July or something from forever ago.
Right. And it sounds like maybe it was it was a little frustrating for people to not solve your witch's riddle.
Well, it
your witch's brew.
I go back and forth on it. So for people who don't know, you know, the article is broken up into five different codes, and then they talk about the different codes. But at the beginning of the episode, Brian and Jason are like, "Oh, I think Brant Hyde hid something in this episode," mm-hmm. Which of course they often do in the hopes that in post production
you will do something fun.
I will figure something out. So zero planning goes into that until I'm in the edit.
Yeah.
And I said, "Okay, I'll do that." So I hid a challenge in the episode.
Okay.
And nobody's figured it out yet.
Okay.
And
so how, like, so there is a means for you to confirm if someone has found it, or are you just waiting for someone to self-report?
There, well, originally we did a similar thing to last time where we were like, hey, here's your special phrase. And if you say this phrase, then like we'll know.
Okay.
Because that was kind of under the assumption that a couple of people might figure it out before too long. And then it kind of gets mixed in with a bunch of other comments. And then it's like, it's one of those things where if you see it and you know, then you know.
Okay. Got it.
Are they getting close?
No.
This was a while ago. Really. So I would not be surprised if a lot of people dropped off.
Yeah. A lot of the activity around it has kind of died down.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a victory state, a win state.
Yeah.
Where once you get there, you'll know that like, okay, I've finished it. I beat it. Here we are.
Sure.
And I've seen if anybody wants to get involved there, go to the subreddit monorogue.reddit.com.
Yeah.
And, there's a little GIF. On that page, if you're using new Reddit, I don't know how that works with old Reddit. I doubt it would show up. Mm-hmm. But that will take you directly to the subreddit where people were talking about it. And there are some people. I really hate that bug.
Look at
on.
This yeah. Text. Why that, is it gray?
So that's a new Reddit bug where if you have a dark background on light Reddit.
Uh huh.
Right now, it turns the text on a post to be lighter than it should because yeah. It's reading a dark background.
That's really dumb.
Yeah, hopefully they'll get that figured out before too long, but yeah. It's super annoying.
Maybe this is why everyone stopped, because they can't read this at all.
Yeah, maybe.
But so there's a little bit of discussion going on here, and the GIF itself is a little bit of a hint.
Yeah. And
does one place and one code?
Yeah,
right?
So I'll give this for people because a lot of people have figured it out. That's the slow scan TV signal at the end,
mm-hmm.
And that's not all that's there. I think a lot of people were like, "Oh, there's a thing here," and then they got it, and they're like, "I don't understand it, but I figured it out. I'm done," and they just kind of walked away from it. And I'm like, "That's not a reward. That's not the thing."
Yeah.
So I kind of go back and forth on it because on one hand, I'm annoyed that people haven't figured it out because it makes me feel like they can't figure it out. And when you design a code, it's really easy to get trapped into like the curse of knowledge and to say, oh, well, obviously people can figure it out because of these reasons that I built into it.
Mm-hmm.
But if people can't figure it out, then it's like maybe you didn't do a good enough job on building the code and giving clues.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I kind of really like the idea of this just sitting around for years and nobody figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's kind of an allure to both.
We should talk off a recording about this thing. I don't know if you and I have had any discussions about it. I've heard you talking about it and I keep meaning to want to like dissect it with you. Cause I was doing a lot of the code stuff for Behind the Scan, which was a lot smaller stuff and meant to be sort of one step and pretty moderately solvable, but that all depends on like what your goal is. Like if you want it to be a very difficult puzzle, if you want it to be something that everybody can solve, if you want it to be a thing where, you know, if you just tried for a second, you would solve it. But yeah, I we should talk about it about specifics of it.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think maybe one of the more frustrating things for me is there is such a long tail on people saying, bring back codes. We want codes in videos. People were like so passionate about that. And then I'm like, okay, here's a code. And then you get like five people who are kind of into it for a day or two, and then it just kind of dies off. And I'm like, where were all the people who wanted codes? They're like, here's a challenging code. Uh-huh. It's a different kind of experience. Yeah.
But it's also worth noting that all the code stuff was on the Scam School channel.
Sure. Although we did get tons of requests on like the Modern Rogue subreddit, for instance, or Modern Rogue videos. Because there were occasional code things with like the subliminal messaging video and there was another one that did it. But
yeah. And I know the codes that we did on Scam School, we were very upfront of like, hey, they're codes.
Right.
And that was like a habitual part of those videos. So it's been like a year since we've done one of those. So I would not be surprised if people were not aware that there was some sort of thing on here. Mm-hmm. Maybe someone will. Do you think anybody? Okay, if I gave you the over under at July 1st, 2019, do you think people will solve it before or after then? So 5 months from now. Yes or no?
I think if anybody wants to solve it, they could definitely solve it before then.
Yeah.
But if it just kind of goes into the background, fades into the background, and people just focus on the new videos, then it'll last longer than that. Because if we're just strictly relying on the trickle of people who watch old videos who just come across it from suggested, then I don't think it'll be solved before then, unless that video gets pushed into circulation by the algorithm, which happens every now and then, where like a old video will get a big bump.
Right.
Then somebody, there might be a big enough influx of viewers to make that possible. So I think it kind of just depends on that stuff. I could see it going either way. But if anybody's like motivated, they'll definitely figure it out before then.
Awesome.
And I also think it's the kind of thing where it's like getting started is the hardest part. Because once you kind of understand the mechanics of the challenge or the puzzle or whatever, then the rest kind of flows a bit easier.
Yeah.
So,
it's really can be tough to, you know, short of like directly telling people, you know, either that there's something there or that you have to discover a specific thing. You know, it's that initial leap can be really difficult for people, you know. It requires finesse to like really, I don't know, it, or you have to be very intentional about how easy you want it to be or not. So,
right.
I guess we'll just see. We'll just keep an eye out if people solve it. Hey, if you solve it, let us know.
Yeah.
Literally post it anywhere.
And also like really selfishly, I really love doing the dissection video after the fact where I'm like, okay, here's all the sneaky stuff I put in here. And then everybody goes, whoa, that's so cool. Because then like everybody who goes, oh, I would love to figure it out, I'm just not good at this kind of thing, or I just don't have time to figure it out, then they could at least be in on the fun and they can appreciate the work that goes into it.
Yeah. Are you planning on doing one? Like, because you did that for backmasking too, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I'll probably do one once somebody figures it out.
Ah, okay. Speaking of you making videos, transition, you really stepped up the game on explainer segments on Modern Rogue.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So I've done a number of them in the past where, you know, Brian and Jason kind of say something that's wrong, and you know, there are a variety of ways to handle it. Either you can cut out them saying the wrong thing, or you can put text on screen that says, hey, he, they're actually wrong, here's the right thing. But in this case, I thought it would be appropriate to kind of just record some video of me in the same location and just vocally explain what's going on. So usually it's a lot of like voiceover and graphics. But in this case, you know, I actually got out into the woods at the same spot and set it up, and John helped me out with audio and stuff.
That's nice. My hand.
Oh
yeah.
Well, and I have to say, it's the long take that you do of explaining, you know, you mentioned this is kind of cut up into two takes, but these are two good long takes that you've got here. Like you did a good, how many takes did it take for you to kind of nail it?
Four or five.
Wow.
Yeah, I think we might have done five or six, and those are like five or six full takes all the way through, and then just picking the best one of those.
Yeah. Dude, that's great.
Yeah, the first pass edit of that episode is up, which includes all of my takes and everything. Mm. And you could definitely see like the different approaches that I have from somebody like Brian or Jason, because I mean all of my stuff was mostly scripted out.
Yeah.
And it kind of has to be if you're doing a correction, because
you got to know what you're saying.
Yeah. You have to know exactly what you're saying, and you can't really screw that up, or else they're going to really take you to task in the comments.
Then we have to cut to Bryce explaining how you got it wrong.
That's so, right.
Some people did say they kind of wish that there was another cut when I was like, I don't know how people make sparks. Oh, and they were like, okay, so here's how people make sparks.
And you even got like Brian in on the bit.
I did. Yeah. Brian,
cause he was out there that day cleaning up.
Yeah. He was just around, and you know, I thought maybe it'd be kind of fun to incorporate him into it a little bit.
That's a good bit. And you had the camera. Was that a camera lens that you had?
Yeah. So it was a lens cap.
Okay.
And, nice. And I thought that would be kind of a fun narrative way to integrate this sort of thing of like, hey, we're doing this whole like separate thing.
Yeah. That looks good. That's a good transition.
Yeah. And then, especially the first one was nice because it was the same scene. So there's a really strong effect of Brian and Jason are here trying to figure it out. And then it's the same spot, but they're not there anymore. And I am. Mm-hmm. Originally I was going to do a thing, cause I was going to record it the night before when I thought of the idea.
Yeah.
And I was going to do like, I was going to shoot it at night and light me up and then do a Luma mat on the background. Mm-hmm. So that way it would basically act as a green screen with the background. And then I would walk into frame and then the background would fade in to black. But then I didn't want to drive over at midnight or whatever. So I was like, I'll figure out a way to do it during the day. And then the lens cap idea came to me, and I think it came together pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think all of these starting fire videos came out pretty nice, and they all seemed pretty short. How was it? Because you knocked those three out. That was the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday thing, right?
Right. Yeah.
How was that editing?
It was all right. The first one took a really long time because there's no cold open, so I had to basically redesign the title card,
right?
Or the title sequence, because the old title sequence was designed with a cold open in mind. So I wanted to do something a little bit different. And so it took a while to kind of figure that out. Also, I taught myself how to use my Machine Mark III, which I've had for like a year. So for people who don't know, it's like it's used for cutting up samples and playing beats and sequencing out sounds and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I've had it for forever. And I've always meant to figure out how it works, but I just never had the time to or whatever. Mm. And so I
this is nice.
Yeah, it's great.
Wow.
And so like Tuesday night or whatever, I spent 3 hours and figured out how to load up a drum instrument into it. Mm-hmm. And so when the text comes on screen, I'm like tapping out the drum hits and everything in time with it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a fun, like, what was that movie, Birdman?
Sure.
It was kind of in that vein because they had like a very impressionistic drum score that accented things that happened on screen. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of a fun thing, but took time to figure out. Also, all of these episodes are in 4K. It's the first time we've published 4K video.
Oh, the first Modern Rogue 4K?
On Modern Rogue.
Yeah, nice.
And
how was the 4K workflow?
It was fine.
Yeah.
You know, kind of had a... I had to drop down the resolution a bit when working with it, but that's fine because it's not. I don't have a 4K monitor, so I can't even see the 4K footage in 4K.
Right. Well, it's no different than what you've been doing for at least like the last couple years, right? Because you guys have been shooting everything in 4K.
Not everything. We've only had
4K camera.
One 4K camera, and the rest were 1080.
Right. The 4K cameras that we have now, the GH5s are, I mean, brand new.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
But I mean,
the GH2s are only 1080.
Oh, and you guys didn't have GH4s for everything?
We only had the one.
Oh, no.
Right.
I did not know that.
Yeah, we only had the one, and that was always used for the wide shot.
Okay.
And so, you know, I have had to do a little bit of proxying stuff and a little bit of, you know, I never had to downgrade the resolution with the GH4 because it was just one in three streams or whatever that was 4K.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had to do the 4K on the all GH5 stuff that we've been doing. Like when we've had the mailbag stuff, that stuff's been fine because I think two 4Ks and it's only two video streams is usually okay. Mm-hmm. But the three, but then working with the proxies is fine. It's faster than working with the 1080 stuff. So I know for me, it hasn't changed very much either, other than like making 4K assets.
Right. Yeah. With this, there was a bit of like, okay, I have to rebuild up some of the CTA stuff so that way it can comply with 4K. A lot of my assets actually are already 4K because I kind of thought ahead of that with some of them. So like some of the grid backgrounds and stuff that we use, those are all in 4K. Mm. And so some of it was just scaling up. Some of it was like positioning, especially the CTA stuff is so specific with positioning because I have a extremely specific layout as it applies to the spacing of the CTA assets that we use, the end card stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like all of the end card stuff is actually shifted up vertically, so it's not centered in the way that you would expect it to be.
Yeah, you have some extra text at the bottom there.
Well, also just YouTube doesn't allow you to keep it centered. It mm-hmm. YouTube's
because of the bottom nav bar.
Yeah. So it's like it was a whole weird thing originally of figuring out, okay, where are the appropriate placements for everything and how are things aligned? Mm-hmm. So I just kind of had to readjust everything for 4K. Mm. But the episodes came out and I think they're mostly fine.
Good hard sell.
Well, it's been a little bit of a polarized response.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting to me because it's the exact same thing as Desperate Defense. Desperate Defense was, hey, here's a handful of ideas and they're all going to end the same. Either we're going to say this was effective or it wasn't effective. Mm-hmm. But those were all like, here are various methods to attack somebody.
Yeah.
And they were all relatively short videos, kind of self-contained. And these were the same things. Like, these are various methods to hopefully start a fire. And some people were like, ah, this should have been one video. And some people were like, ah, I love it because it's its own thing. And it was just really weird and all over the map. But I think the videos themselves are fine.
Yeah, I do like the separating of them for, like, I guess, in the future proofing sense of, like, somebody literally looking YouTube, like, how the fuck do we start a fire with this method? And then that particular method comes up.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a lot of... kind of my positioning with the Scam Nation stuff is wanting to keep stuff smaller and more or less modular because partially for an SEO sort of thing, right? One of the ideas that we want to do is to be more upfront with the name, like the names of tricks that we're teaching and stuff like that, which kind of can be hidden if you are mashing a lot of things together, which is like, you know, I mean, back in the old scam school days when literally the title would not tell you anything about
five tips to win a free drink at the bar.
They didn't even put in keywords for like the name of the terms or the terms of the tricks that they were doing.
Right.
So that's a similar thing for me. And you know, just to speak more to like a broader Scam Nation stroke is like, I would love for us to be able to like, say something and refer specifically back to like a video about a thing, right? So if we're teaching a trick and part of it is you have to do a Hindu shuffle, then ideally we would have a thing where you can go back and watch how to do a Hindu shuffle.
You'd have the Hindu shuffle video.
Exactly.
And so that way, anytime you do something that involves a Hindu shuffle, you don't have to spend half of the video saying, okay, we're going to reteach the Hindu shuffle.
Right. And so that's some of my mindset when we go into like programming for the Scam Nation thing, because I could see, you know, all of these Starting Fire videos, I could see them all together in one thing. I mean, I think they were originally planned out to be one thing, but shooting them was just kind of all over the place. Or I think like right before we started shooting, they decided to split them up into different things.
Yeah, I think early on it might have gone either way, but then day of we decided to do them split up.
Yeah, and I think in general we're better for having them split up. You know, it's weird, you know, on a metric side, right? Like none of the best one of the three is maybe a little under where some other videos are performing. But also if these were all one video, then you would be collapsing a bunch of views into like one third of that. Right. Mm. I don't know. It's an interesting thing deciding how active a channel should be versus how long the videos should be, you know, because if you put all these together, it just would have been one video at the end of the week instead of three.
Right. And it all would have basically been all the same material in content. It's also interesting because we just came off of Rapid Response Week last month, which is another series of broken up videos. I think people had a lot fewer problems with those because they are so distinctly separate topics of discussion.
Yeah.
Although it was definitely a thing on the plate where we considered, like, do we just have a rapid response video where they just talk about a whole bunch of rapid response stuff? Mm-hmm. And I'm glad we went with a separate route on that because it's very cleanly broken apart.
Yeah. It gives you enough time to get into all of the details on each specific topic.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you put all of these together, you wouldn't end up with, you know, what is this, over an hour, 70 minutes of stuff. It would be cut down versions of all of this probably.
Right.
You know.
And also I think part of the problem lies in the fact that, not the fact that this is what we're doing, but in that I don't think any of us, particularly Brian and Jason, have completely nailed down exactly what the structure of a video like that is. Mm-hmm. So like the rapid response one, I think each one of those videos follows mostly the structure of a regular Monorogue video.
Yeah.
Whereas these fire starting videos kind of were a bit more simple and basic because they didn't have the research to talk about the science going on there. And the demonstration is so simple. It's just like, okay, let's hold a magnifying glass here until the fire starts,
right?
You know, and then it's like, okay, well, what do you have to add after that? Like, not a whole lot. So I think the fact that those ideas were so simple and that they didn't have as much room to riff and they didn't have as much room to learn more lessons out of it. Mm-hmm. I think that's more what people are responding to rather than the idea necessarily of splitting them apart.
Yeah. So while we're on the topic of talking about videos, John, we talked a little bit last week about you doing some editing stuff for Scam Nation.
Yeah.
How's your feeling on that?
I feel okay.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You pointed me to what would be like good templates to look at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like previous builds that you've done, so I can look at it and break down. And because my goal in this is not only to, you know, start helping you edit stuff, but to also build a style guide for Scam Nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that one is still something that's very much under construction because...
Yeah, it's still very much in flux, whereas like, I don't know if you've... Have we shared the style guide for Modern Rogue with you? Because that is kind of growing by leaps and bounds. Like Brandt finally got in on it, and it's a pretty impressive beast now, wouldn't you say?
It's getting there.
Okay, yeah. That's very high praise from Brandt.
$1 million is a lot of money, right, Brandt?
Depends on who you ask. But also, like, I assume similar to Scamnation right now, like, Modern Rogue is a very experimental show. Yeah. I mean, just with the videos we were just talking about, it's like totally different title sequence, totally different assets in a lot of ways, totally different ways of presenting information.
Yeah. Rules keep changing, man.
Yeah, it's always kind of in flux.
Yeah, like, and Scamnation, you know, at least with Modern Rogue, there are, you know, what, a couple years now under your belt of just like handling different scenarios in different ways, or at least looking and saying, okay, well, this is how we handled something in the past, where, you know, intentionally with Scamnation, we're trying to make different types of videos. But I also think that we are approaching it, or at least I'm trying to approach it with some specific abstract thoughts, right? Like, I'd like the videos to be shorter. We would like, you know, I stuff to be more modular, trying to feel, I don't know, a cleanness in terms of graphics, not, you know, not overdoing it with a lot of like, I don't have a better word for this, but like decoration, right? Like, I think the work,
your look is quite austere.
It's clean, or it's stripped down, right? Like, from a technical and logistical side to like a viewership side, it is maybe a little bare, even because I know before I had made any of the graphics for Scamnation, I was still trying to figure out what our motif should be, or if we should have a motif. And because with Scam School, you know, especially when it started, it was very much like the composition notebooks and paper and a very like grade school type of motif, right? It works into that format and that concept, where here I would rather like not even weigh the videos down with trying to have a motif and trying to focus more on like if Wikipedia was making videos, like, you wouldn't have like this big like skeuomorphism of like a big book opening and pages compass turning. Yeah, right. It would probably just be like a little bug in the corner and kind of getting on to, you know, presenting it as is. So, you know, those are some broad tenets of the way we're approaching stuff. But, you know, there are plenty of scenarios and ideas for things that we're trying to, that, you know, are coming down the pipe that we don't have.
Yeah. Like, we're trying to, also another thing I'm on is, should have added this to the list, but the whole like social media Instagram thing, like that build I sent you the last, you know, couple days of like breaking down episodes into pictures and silent videos, you know, and
yeah, and all of like that stuff is definitely an experiment. Like, Brant, I know, has been doing some social media stuff for Modern Rogue. I've been trying to make, you know, materials for social media when I'm wrapping up my cuts. But,
and if anybody out there is watching, please subscribe or follow, I don't know how it works with Instagram, the Scamnation and Modern Rogue.
Scamnation Show and Modern Rogue Show.
Scamnation Show and Modern Rogue Show at Instagram. Because once we hit 10,000 subscribers of each, we can upload full-length episodes onto IGTV, which is a thing that exists. And as much as I hate it, it is growing like crazy.
And also, maybe more importantly, at least in my eyes, once you hit 10,000 followers, then you can actually link externally.
Oh, nice.
Oh, snap.
I didn't know that.
So, like, if you were like, hey, we got a new episode up, you could do, like, a quick story post for 15 seconds, and then it's like, swipe up to actually go to the thing.
Nice.
Which otherwise you cannot do.
Right. Yeah, like, I think social media is an avenue we're all kind of trying to make sure we at least have some foot in the door. You know, going forward, like, you know, I mean, ideally, right, on all of these things, they would be treated kind of in the way that like the Modern Rogue website is, in terms of like having something every day, having something, even if it's not from us, but something tangentially related or something that, you know, that specific community. There was a good video from The Adobe Spark team, Veronica Belmont is now like a product manager at Adobe Spark. So she was like one of the two women giving this talk, and it was talking about Adobe Spark. And so it was very like product focused, but they were talking about like, you know, if you're a business, right, and you're trying to sell your, you know, services online or promote your services online, right, like you should, they had a ratio of like, here's how many things a week should be like directly about your business, how many things a week should be directly about, you know, your specific niche and segment of the world, right? Like if you're yoga, here are some, you should have this many things about yoga, even if it's not about you. And then this many that are tangentially related or things that the people in your community enjoy. Trying to be, it's very similar to the Reddit rules of like self-promotion, where they really want you to be part of a community before you start promoting yourself. And it's just that transplanted to any other social media network. Yeah, of like
you can't do an ad every single day.
But more specifically, like making even soft connections to other things. Like if we had more time to deal with like the Scam Nation stuff, like we would follow other magicians and other outlets that are covering magic and people who are making magic props and just retweeting stuff or quote tweeting stuff, like having more activity of stuff that we didn't even make, just as terms of like being in the landscape and not being in a vacuum, which I think is kind of what we're good at, is making stuff and making stuff in the vacuum of like, okay, we're generating a thing and now we're putting it out, which is different than social media, which is being a part of the landscape and connecting both your own content and other people's content.
Yeah. And there's a lot more, I guess, license to just throw things out there.
Yeah. Yeah, know? For sure. You should check out, I do think it's worth checking out the Adobe Spark thing. Their tool is kind of neat. It's like a web-based tool just for making social media posts. And granted, like, you know, we make videos here, so we at least have a lot of video content, but it's like, you know, upload your logo, set up all your branding stuff, and they make different types of posts and they format them for all the different places.
I am barely familiar with Adobe Spark, but is there a specific video that you were referring to?
Let me see. Adobe Spark, probably 2019. It was, I think, part of Adobe Max is what their conference is called. Let me see. Adobe Spark, Veronica Belmont might find it. Yeah, your secret weapon for designing social media content with Veronica Belmont. So they have a whole talk here and they walk you through.
Yeah, I will check that out, because yeah, like my I'm dating my girlfriend. She's a marketing director, and she keeps trying to force Adobe Spark on me, and I think she's right. I should look into it.
And I mean I know that we can always, like, all three of us could probably make a better graphic than anything Adobe Spark can make, but also it makes stuff very fast. And so if you're trying to like, hey, I have a quote here that I'm going to try to tweet out, you could just put it into this and it would make a graphic and a JPEG and it would look fine. So I don't know, something to I think be
nice
to look into. But yeah, so we're going to have you start working on some of the smaller Scam Nation stuff. I think, you know, the release schedule that we've got now is trying to always have something on Thursdays. And I'd like to go back to having our second thing of the week be probably on Tuesdays.
Nice.
And we're in a period, we're kind of in a soft period now with Scam Nation, where we want to very gradually build up in terms of expectations for the audience, in terms of it. Because we went from having Scam School and Scam School Remix plus the occasional like product video, which was 2 to 3 videos a week, down to 1, maybe 2 if I can do 2. And so I'd like us to get back to at least 2 a week, but that means, you know, unlike Remix, which kind of didn't need too much, you know, original shooting, you guys would just do the rap, Brant would just do the rappers, where that kind of has to be some, that has to all be original content or quote unquote original content. It has to be something that we go and shoot almost the entirety of. And there are ways that we can do easy stuff like that. I mean, we've done the mailbags, which I think are good. And I think if we keep getting good questions, that could be a regular thing. But equally, I don't want to say Tuesdays is mailbags, you know.
Right.
Where I am kind of feeling very much like the giant bomb model of like, okay, we have a thing on Thursdays. That's a thing, and it generally looks like this. And then we can have other types of things in surrounding that nucleus, whether it's mailbags, whether it's some sort of community thing, whether it's a trick, a short trick, or something basic like teaching the Hindu shuffle, or Hindu force, because what we're trying to get is more activity on that channel, or at least that's our hypothesis of getting that channel a little more active and a little more viewed.
Yeah,
you know. Mm. So I'm excited. I'm excited to kind of start working with you, John, on that stuff. I think, you know, it's designed to kind of be a pretty simple, straightforward edit. So
yeah,
you know, hopefully some of those can come out relatively soon.
So nice.
Keep an eye on that. Speaking of Scam Nation, we did a shoot last week, and it was our first like big shoot for Scam Nation, I feel like.
Right, yeah.
What did we do last week?
First time getting everybody out.
Yeah, we went to the Wizard Academy.
Oh, that shoot.
Yeah, yes. And we shot like 7 videos, 6 of them for us, of different Scam Nation type videos, with Rex and Daniel from the Whiskey Tribe. Y'all, okay. This is not a burn. I was looking at
a white phosphorus burn.
We'll get to that. Hold on, we'll get to that. Rex and Daniel are very much kind of ingrained in this Wizard Academy, which is like a campus of a bunch of different types of enterprises, basically. And so like the two of them are working on the bar that we were shooting at, which is tied very closely into the Whiskey Tribe. But the Whiskey Tribe also has the Whiskey Vault. But I don't know. I was looking for their URL, what URLs I should give them, and they were like 8 different incredibly valid things that they should have been under. I think which ones did which we went with the Whiskey Tribe and the Whiskey Vault YouTube, but it was like, oh well, they have the Whiskey Tribe, but the Whiskey Vault is the name of the room, but it's also like their scam stuff, like second channel, but then the bar has a webpage and the Whiskey Sommelier course has a thing. So, but they were great that we had this video, the Match Gag Mania, but it also has the name of the tricks that are in it.
Oh. Yeah.
And, this was fun. It was definitely like 3 older scam school effects. The Kung Fu Match, the Human Chimney and the Jack-O-Lantern, the Human Chimney and the Jack-O-Lantern, which get bandied about just kind of all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is one thing in editing this. So when Brian teaches the Human Chimney, where breathe in the initial ignition of a match, one of the chemicals gets inside your lungs and draws out the water vapor and turns it into a vapor, and so you open your mouth and it looks like there's smoke and it's actually vape juice. And he said in
oh, so that's why it's Scam Nation, Vape Nation.
That's right.
Gotcha.
Scam Nation. And when we shot it, he was like, you know, one of these chemicals, he made a point to like point out like, oh, I think there's like white phosphorus in this, which is an incredibly dangerous, deadly chemical. And I mean, he said it to illustrate the point that like, you shouldn't be breathing in chemical fumes. You shouldn't eat match heads, you know,
right.
All that stuff is dangerous. But I wasn't sure whether I would cut that or leave it in. And cause I went to look it up and it's like a subheading on the match's Wikipedia page. Like it's so important, white phosphorus, that it is like a historical turning point in the production of matches, being that about 100 years ago, everyone outlawed using white phosphorus in match heads.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hesitant about that because no match you're going to find today has white phosphorus in it. None of them should have it. And when you look up the Human Chimney, it's all Scam Nation or all Scam School stuff. And so I think I ended up having to cut it out. And I think there is one instance of them like kind of talking over each other where one of them says white phosphorus, which was quiet enough where I don't think it's like a big deal on its own. But it was a thing where like we are essentially an authority on this. I mean, Brian's literally been teaching it for 10 years. Mm-hmm. So he should probably not be saying there's white phosphorus in matches.
Right.
That seems like kind of basic level, just some basic level research. So that's.
Did you have your own explainer segment?
No, I just cut it out. My alternative would have been to have a graph, have a lower third on screen that says, actually, white phosphorus hasn't been used in 100 years. But then that becomes like not just refuting the fact, but also refuting the sentiment, which is that matches are dangerous. They are dangerous, but it undercuts it if I say, well, white phosphorus is not in there. There's a non-zero amount of undercutting that I didn't want to do that. So I just cut it all out. But the stuff from that shoot came out really well. I think this match one that came out last week was probably the most difficult in terms of coloring. For some reason, the cameras were not like super. And we've been doing a white card thing with the cameras a little bit more lately, and generally that gets everyone kind of where they need to be. But for some reason, this one it wasn't even close with some of them. So
yeah, I keep thinking about that white card. I keep thinking like, for a single camera shoot, that's the perfect solution. But for multiple cameras, it's like. In my mind, I'm like, shouldn't we just all use an automatic setting that's appropriate? And that way it's all the exact same, like the daylight setting on the GH5s.
But the lenses are different too.
Oh.
Like the lenses will give different casts also.
Yeah.
And like specifically like an auto set, I wouldn't want it to be on like an all auto setting because then...
It'll
just have them
mid.
Well, I don't. Yeah, definitely not an auto setting where it's adjusting, but like a formula setting that they have in the camera.
And also, you might run into problems for like this match video. I would imagine the camera that is on the right side of the wide, which is pointing to the left side, mm-hmm. is probably going to get more blue light than the opposite camera, just because of the way that the light is bouncing into the scene.
Right. We had an open door providing a lot of natural sunlight, and the inside of the place was very warm.
Yeah, so you have really warm light inside and then this big flood of super blue light from outside.
Yeah. There was a little bit of that, but there was also, I think the center camera was just way warmer than it should have been looking at it out, like I think I you know, being in the space, things look a certain way, and looking at it in the footage, it was definitely that was the bigger culprit than the side ones. But I also think that the rest of them were probably a little more straightforward in terms of the coloring. So
let me just ask though.
Okay,
did you use a color chart?
No, I don't use the color chart stuff. Just the
I know.
Well, just the resolve workflow. I felt like I did it a couple of times, and it seemed like it did something, but in more cases than not, I'd still have to go in and fix it and touch it up, which took about as much work as doing it manually in Lumetri. So, so no color chart.
All right.
Okay. What? Oh my gosh.
I'm very much on the fence about, you know, the whole color thing in general.
No more colors. John Rael says it here. No more color.
Screw colors.
I mean, if we wanted to go all grayscale, I am on board with it.
I think that's going to have trouble with the magic stuff. Mm. I think that might interfere a little bit with the magic stuff.
Hey, you're going to have to perform for colorblind people at some time.
What?
So, I'm equal opportunity
Bryce doesn't
over
want
here.
To perform for colorblind
people. Oh my goodness. Okay. Last big topic here. So last month we talked about the Night Attack album, All's Well, coming out, and it came out, and it seemed to perform very well.
It hit number one.
It hit number one in all of Amazon, in terms of like literally all Amazon music, just all albums. We have a screenshot here from the
from Amazon
from Amazon here at it being number four early in the day, and then at some point it ended up being at like midnight or something. Oh, that's why I don't have a number one on here, because
the witching hour.
It was like an hour after we turned off the stream and went home that it hit number one on Amazon. It was number three in iTunes for the better part of a day, right behind A Star Is Born and a new country album that had just come out. So it did very well, and then it hasn't shown up on the Billboard charts. We can take a look at the Billboard charts for today, but I'm gonna assume that it's not there either.
All right.
And we don't know why. You know, the guys have had three albums that have charted on the Billboard charts. Two of those were hit number one on comedy albums, it's not up here for today either. In all of those cases, we didn't really have to do anything special. Kind of the word that we got from someone within the past few days. John Billboard called and said they were saying that we needed to sign up for like Nielsen SoundScan for them to start tracking stuff, which was never the case in the past. And so we're not sure if we were given wrong information about the pricing of the album in terms of what is acceptable for that. We're not sure if maybe something has changed and you do have to register with Nielsen. We don't quite know, but you know, we definitely know, you know, at a point in the day we were number one on all of Amazon. We were consistently in the top 10 for an entire day on Amazon. We like did incredible on iTunes. So, cause I was expecting the Billboard stuff to come up and seeing it in the top 200 albums for the week. Like I really thought it would be like in at least the top 100. Of just all albums of the week.
Right.
Especially just because sales are down. But we're still kind of figuring that out and seeing what the deal is, and whether we should relist it or try to resell it at a different, like make a special Billboard edition or something. We don't know. We don't have any thoughts for plans on that yet. But we would like our win. We definitely won. We definitely beat out unnamed Rick and Morty soundtrack, which has been on the top for like literally 15 weeks. So,
I mean, you can't compete with the intellectuals. So,
and I'm convinced that this Rick and Morty soundtrack is a vinyl pressing. Like I'm like 80% convinced that
superior sound quality,
that most, if not all of this is from physical vinyl sales, beating out, you know, a bunch of other like comedians sets.
Outside of bragging rights, what are you looking to get out of Billboard placement?
Well, it is mostly bragging rights, but also that is, I think, for especially for Brian and Justin, that is one of the conceptual elements of the album, was giving back to Stephen Cogswell in the form of giving him a number one album that he made. Okay. And look, that's the concept, and they're sticking to it. And I think we all want that to be the case, but we don't quite know what that means with the reality of the Billboard charts, you know. Because there are definitely a lot of sales, but we just don't have them recorded down. They're not that specific notation on, you know, the archive of all Billboard charts doesn't exist. It's just what we have in the moment on these various store charts, which are not archived. So, I mean, we've saved screenshots and stuff, but you know what I mean.
Right.
It's not a ledger of sales history. So
tears in the rain.
Well, we'd like it to not be that, so I think that's very apt. All right, we have just a little bit more time here to talk about some off-topic stuff. Brant?
Sure.
We could skip this if that was just a joke.
I mean, it was mostly a joke, so I'll just have a one-off line.
Sure.
You ever go into a house and in all of the bathrooms, there are just no hand towels? How are you supposed to dry your hands? Well, apparently, paper towels.
Yes.
Which you might as well use like toilet paper at that point. Oh, like, it's fuck. The same thing.
Come on.
if you have hand towels, why would you not just put out your hand towels so that when you wash your hands, mm-hmm. you could dry your hands with a towel specifically designed for drying your hands?
This is not a fight I'm going to get into.
I think you need a better punch at the end there.
See, here
it's called hand towels.
Oh my god! Oh,
there we go.
The great Jerry Seinfeld. Like
there's your punch.
What's the deal?
Yeah, no, I'm not getting into this fight. This is not my home. This is not my hand towel.
I'm
policy.
Just saying, it makes a lot of sense to have hand towels.
Well, you know what I'm
curious. Also funny about that.
Also, I've been in bathrooms in this household before. Not to put anybody on blast, but a little bit putting on blast right now. I've been in bathrooms in this household before with no hand towels, no paper towels,
yes,
no washcloths, nothing. Just like, I guess you got wet hands now.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I'm
wondering? I think that's why the paper towels were put out, as if there are not hand towels.
A concession of like, well, okay, here's something.
Basically.
Brent, you know what we got to try? Good you grief. Need to bring in one or two of your own hand towels and put them in the bathroom, and we'll just see if they're still there.
Dude, I've got like, nice hand towels. I'm not giving up my hand towels.
Yeah, you're going to be out
it's
hand
an experiment.
Towels.
Yeah.
What experiment? That's the most passive-aggressive thing. Bonnie would hate you.
No, see if they
like,
disappear.
Whose towels are these?
Like maybe
does he think we don't have enough towels?
Yeah, maybe it's something where they just don't like hand towels, and they're like, who put hand towels in here?
Hey?
Who doesn't like hand towels?
Maybe they're not as sanitary. You got sticky kids around here touching hand towels. I don't know.
All right, John, I'm putting a minute on the clock here. You asked for a little bit of time to talk about movies.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I watched Annihilation, and I remember there was that controversy, like the producers got in a fight and they didn't want to widely distribute the movie.
No. I'll take your word on it.
It was a guy who did Ex Machina, and
I remember him being upset that the studio sold it to Netflix outside of the U.S. Yes.
Yeah, the reason they did it is because one producer was like, hell no, this is not going to theaters. And the other producer like backed him up. It's like, no, director's final cut or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, whatever director put his foot down, he did them a huge favor for not allowing that piece of crap to make it in theaters.
Well, in the U.S., it was in theaters.
Was it?
Yeah, that was the whole thing. Everywhere else, like in Canada, it was on Netflix day one, and it had a theatrical run.
Let me tell you, if you paid money and walked into a theater and were stuck there for 3 hours for that, like that was a huge
mistake. No, tell me
mistake.
More about who I think Annihilation is nebulous. I think it's a very nebulous film, but I enjoyed my time with it.
Did you?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it as well.
Yeah.
Did you?
It wasn't very accessible, but
I
enjoyed
it. Was it the lack of storytelling? Was it the fact that the movie took an hour to begin?
I mean, it's...
It's been like a year and a half since I've seen
it. Yeah, I haven't watched it lately. Is it on Netflix now?
It's on Amazon Prime, I want to say.
Really? Oh, interesting.
But if you want to see...
I think that checks out.
Yeah.
But positive note, if you want to see something that is esoteric and like seemingly obtuse, uh-huh. that actually pays off, I would say catch The Signal, which is
The Signal.
The worst name for a sci-fi movie ever.
I think I've seen The Signal. Does it start off with hackery stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I saw The Signal like right before one of our trips somewhere. Cause I remember talking to Brian about it at an airport.
And it's a movie that you're like the first 20 minutes, you're like, oh God, this is going nowhere fast. But then after a little bit, it gives you not only a payoff in the end, but like 30, 40 minutes in, it's like, oh, There's some treats for us. There's some storytelling. There are things that happen.
Okay,
it's a little schlocky at times, but I think it has some fun with what it's trying to go for.
Yeah,
and I can't fault it for that.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I had not even heard about this. This is from 2014.
Yeah, and if you read the description or watch the trailer, you're gonna guarantee yourself that it is a story that goes nowhere, that has nothing. Because they buried the lead, and I'll just tell you, like the first few, like really? 30 minutes, not a bone. I'm sure they would feel it's a spoiler because they hid this from every amount of PR or whatever, but mm-hmm. it's a movie where people get their limbs replaced by like super alien power. We don't know what they're replaced with, uh-huh. but they like
Revolver Ocelot.
Essentially, they get like,
okay, now
brother,
brother.
So it's kind of like a weird, you know, flip the script superhero tale of yeah. people who've been kidnapped and forced with superpowers.
Huh.
And that's what the movie's about.
Okay.
And they totally bury the lead.
Sounds a little like, and I'm saying this knowing nothing about either of these movies, but that sounds like Upgrade. That sounds a little bit like
It does sound
Upgrade.
A little bit like that. And I haven't seen Upgrade either.
It's different. I haven't seen Upgrade either. Okay. But it's different.
I mean, I believe it's different. Yeah. But okay. Well, there you go. The signal. If we're ranting, okay, I'm gonna have an off-topic rant.
Uh-huh.
So, over the past couple
full house,
over the past couple of weeks, so I have a Switch and I got they've got emulators and stuff for the Switch,
uh-huh.
and so I've been going back and playing some old PlayStation 1 games, and I finished up the other night Final Fantasy VIII, and I think that there are so many good things about Final Fantasy VIII that it's a real shame that the last 70% of that game is really bad.
The last 70?
Yeah. Like, I think the first disc is like a masterpiece. And I think 2, 3, and 4 are like super rushed, lack world building. They gloss over like really cool shit I would love to learn a lot about. All to kind of just push you and rush you into saving the people and saving the world. It's a real shame. I mean, there are plot threads you can tell that they were starting and then get sidetracked. Like, I don't think it's not outlandish to say, okay, well, you know, this story started about being about war and politicking and turned into humanity trying to rally together and save the world. I think that's not an uncommon trope or an uncommon way to structure a thing. But there are significant portions of that game that are like, hey, kid, I know you grew up in a school that was dedicated to making people mercenaries, but have you ever thought about violence being bad? And you can be like, you answer either yes or no, and it's like, you thought about it, huh?
You would answer that way,
huh? You
would
answer that way, yeah. Like, literally, the people in that town stop talking to you. Like, it's like, you almost explored something. Like, there's a bit at the end where he's like, well, hey, you know what? Sometimes you need force, whatever. But it's like, lots of, like, big dropped threads. You kind of stop losing. You sort of stop developing the characters. And there are so many good things. I mean, doing a modern day sort of time period for a Final Fantasy game, having high tech stuff, but mixing in fantasy and magic, like weaponizing magic. Like, they explain magic. Like, hey, you know, there is magic, but the thing that like soldiers use is a different type of magic. And
nano machines.
No, they call it paramagic. I don't remember why, but it's like, it's kind of magic-y. You know, they have the junctioning system, which I think is really complicated, but I like it. They have like a ton of CG, like a ton of pre-rendered video stuff. You know, they have a limited party. There are only like 6 characters in that game. Like, it's not like, here's fucking 12 people you have to go back and forth between. It's like, no, here are the characters and we're focusing on them. And the bad parts of that game, like everything on paper is really good, but it's just, for a 30-hour game, I would have thought more of that time would have been spent on good world building or development in the world or character development. And kind of all of that gets pushed aside after the first disc.
I think I told you I tried to play a Final Fantasy game once, and after the first hour, they were about ready to start letting me train to fight to learn how to begin my journey, and I'm like, I'm out.
What was the Final Fantasy game where they introduced the sport thing that was like in the dome or
Blitzball? That's Final Fantasy X.
Okay, that's the only Final Fantasy I've played, and I only played it on a demo disc. So,
Final Fantasy X is a good game. the Blitzball stuff is weird, for sure. I mean, I think the card game in Final Fantasy VIII, I think, is incredible. I definitely spent way more time doing that than I should have.
Okay, if I insisted on playing a Final Fantasy game, what should I play?
Ooh, how much time do you have? I mean, pretend, seriously, like, are we saying 10 hours or 30 hours?
Under 30.
Under 30?
Doesn't have to be, it could be more than 10.
I would probably say, I would maybe say Final Fantasy X or Final Fantasy VII. Though I think, I have not played Final Fantasy IX, but I watched the GDQ speedrun, which made me want to play Final Fantasy IX. And that game seems like it definitely has like actual story shit in it. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's also probably a really good Final Fantasy IX is especially nice because it's the last one that they did on the PlayStation 1. And so they really had like a handle on like how to make those games and how to do cool stuff with them.
Yeah. It is cool seeing like the final games of a specific system.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Kirby's Dream Land on the original NES.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was the most they could possibly do with 8-bits.
Yeah. There's always, like, really cool, evolutions of, like, what people can do with the technology. I was playing Mega Man Legends 2, and I was just, like, blown away by the stuff that they were doing. And I went back to look, you know, all that stuff up, and, like, a lot of the stuff that they were doing in terms of, like, you know, tons of voice acting, like in-engine cutscenes, like predate a bunch of bigger games that use all that stuff, like Metal Gear Solid. It is really cool going back and seeing like what they could pull off with relatively limited, technology.
Well, speaking of that, no Star Trek talk.
Any Star Trek update?
No.
Okay.
No.
I mean, you need a break from a binge.
From three consecutive binges.
Yeah.
I played Return of Obra Dinn the other day.
That's right. How far did you get? I didn't get to watch all your stream.
I beat it.
Nice.
How
long?
7 hours or so, probably.
That's pretty good. It took me 10 my first time.
And I did most of the solving stuff offline.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because I just didn't want to get like too many hints about things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a cool, neat little thing. I think towards the end, I had to do a little bit more of like, okay, I know that these four guys are one of these four guys and their names aren't said anywhere. So I just kind of have to guess different permutations of them.
Oh, were you like brute forcing it?
Just for like a couple select people.
Yeah.
But other than that, there's a lot of really fun problem solving and finding like little clues here and there, mm-hmm. and piecing stuff together.
Yeah. It's really neat. A Return of the Obra Dinn.
Yeah.
It's from Lucas Pope. He made Papers, Please.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
Yeah. It's cool.
I replayed it on the stream, on the Night Attack stream, like the day before you streamed it. And I only meant to do like 2 or 3 hours, but I just kept like figuring and figuring them out again. Cause it's the sort of thing you could replay it given enough time because it's not complicated enough where you need to like learn how to play it.
Mm-hmm.
And the detail, like there are only a few people you're going to remember the next time you play through, if you remember them at all. And for me, it was right. mostly like, well, I know that this is like the important character, but I don't remember which person it is, but I know to be on a lookout for the clues that give you this person.
Right.
And so like after like hour three or something, I was like, well, I'm 75% of the way done. I might as well just do it all. I got up to the ending stuff, the 100% ending, but I didn't play that on stream because gotcha. People should support that game.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I watched One Punch Man.
That's a good show.
The anime.
Yeah.
I had a little bit of qualms with a couple of the characters in there, but like, generally speaking, that's a very fun show.
It is fun, and it feels conceptually a little subversive.
Yeah,
I mean, from a lot of anime stuff. I guess I should say I am not a big anime fan, which is kind of why I love it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, anime can be very formulaic, and so anything that breaks out of that formula is especially
refreshing. Openly mocks the formula.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Like One Punch Man, like there's so many like different little tropey things that it's poking fun at.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it also felt like, I'm sure this is maybe more me bringing to it than it's giving me, but it felt very like commentary of comic book culture and like superhero culture that we're in right now, where it's like, oh yeah, don't worry about this dude. He'll never get hurt and he'll never die and he'll always kill anybody who comes across him.
Yeah.
And look at how absolutely depressed this dude is because there's no challenge in life.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was
I think I didn't finish that first season, but it is good. And they're coming out with a second season.
It's a pretty quick thing. I think it's only like 12 episodes or something.
Oh,
it's
wow. That's
it's
nice.
A small... season.
It's kind of weird to me how One Punch Man and My Hero Academia came out at the exact same time, but now My Hero Academia has like three seasons or four seasons or something like that.
Yeah,
it's weird. It's programming for anime stuff.
Yeah, I looked into it a little bit, and One Punch Man like kind of shifted production companies for the next season and different director and everything. So
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if there was just like logistical production. Obstacles.
That makes sense. I mean, those animes are always expensive and time consuming to make. So,
yeah. Oh, and just like, I love so much. You see it especially in the first episode of One Punch Man, but like when they get into the fight stuff and the art style devolves as things get really intense.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so incredible because it just like the art style totally changes for effect and impact. And it's really phenomenal.
Yeah. Nice. That's on Netflix now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I saw it.
All right. We're out of time here, so we need to do plugs. Brant?
Plugs. No, mine's real.
There you go. Okay. That's what you're looking for.
you can find me on Twitter at Gatowag, GATOWAG, or Instagram, or Twitch, or... Twitter.com/modernrogueshow or the Instagram for that as well, or here.
Yeah. On this show.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. John?
All things skeptically pwned, PWND. Right now we're doing our series of Buy It or Burn It, where we put DVDs for sale on eBay every week, and every time they don't sell, we set them on fire. So
wow. Check that out.
Yeah.
One more, what is it again? Skeptically pwned?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like the typo.
The typo?
The
fat fingers.
PWNED.
You would think it would be owned, but then it's the P.
Pwned. Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at BrightCasBrycs. I do a lot of this.
He's pretty young. He doesn't get the reference.
I'm not a gamer. Yeah. I'm not a real gamer. You can find me on the Twitch channel here, twitch.tv/nightattack. And I have a new podcast called Trending Lemon, trendinglemon.com. We've got like 7 episodes now.
What?
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. We take online quizzes as a means to interview people.
Mm.
So it's pretty fun. This show is called The Bizarre Briefing. You just listen to it. You can find past episodes and show notes and all sorts of good links at bizarrebriefing.com. Or if you'd like to follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/scamstuff is where we post the video versions of this. We record this around the end of the month to talk about the month before. So we'll probably be back in 3 weeks or so to record another episode. But until then, bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.